A bitch with a big ass. Tell me what I don't like Mondays. Tell me what I know Victoria's Secret. Let's see it. Bob, Bob, Luma, Bla, Bam, Boom. Welcome back to Lyrics for Lunch. This is the show that tells you everything you ever wanted to know and lots of stuff you didn't about all of your favorite songs. I'm your host, Lindsay Tucker. Joining me this week and every week, it's Aviv.
Hi.
How are you this week, Lindsay?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm so bad.
You're so bad.
Yeah, so my computer stopped working. You'll notice a difference in the quality of my video this week. And so I ordered a new computer yesterday, and my dishwasher is still broken, and I have to buy a new dishwasher. So just been hand washing dishes. And using an old computer. And
you could have got the home warranty last time I told you get the home warranty, and then you would have been 1 week closer to getting a free dishwasher.
For us, the home warranty is like way expensive. I don't know where you're getting this $25 a month thing.
American Home Shield.
Okay, well, this episode. Want me to refer you? Yeah, can you?
Maybe you'll get a
discount. I don't know how any of this works.
Yeah, I'll see if I can.
So what are we talking about today, Lindsay, other than my broken appliances?
I think we're going to do another round of trivia.
We are doing another round of trivia. Okay, so we're subverting the format, or not subverting because we haven't really locked the format of trivia just yet, but we're doing a couple different versions of trivia. So six questions just like last time, but for this one, there will be different kinds of questions. And I hinted this to you in my text this week. We are going to do questions in the form of other television game shows. So a couple of the questions will be in the style of other trivia shows.
Okay. I'm excited. Yeah,
so let's get going.
See if I can this get... 50% right.
50% is your goal?
Yeah.
So I will say that these are difficult questions.
Why?
Question number one. I gotta dig up all of the sound effects that I used in the other trivia. We all know the name of the haircut that is business in the front, party in the back, right?
The mullet.
See, you're great, doing great already.
Killing it.
Which musical act coined the term mullet? A.
Milli Vanilli. Bob. Oh. Okay.
I'm gonna give you options. Cool. It's not Milli Vanilli.
I'll take the options, please.
A. Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. B. David Bowie as Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. C. The Beastie Boys. Or D. Billy Idol.
D.
Billy Idol, final answer?
Yes.
According to the Oxford English Dictionary, the use of the term mullet to describe a hairstyle was apparently coined and popularized by the American hip-hop group The Beastie Boys.
Damn it.
They used the term mullet and mullet head as epithets in their 1994 song Mullet Head.
Fantastic. Have you ever had a mullet?
I did have a mullet. We're going to talk a little bit about my mullet as well. I'll see if I can dig up a picture. But this is the Beastie Boys song Mullet Head.
Pretzel Nugget EP.
Yes, the Pretzel Nugget EP. I do love pretzel nuggets.
Thank you.
Beastie Boys describe Mullet in their song Mullet Head as a number one on the sides and don't touch the back, a number six on top and don't cut it whack. So let's take a quick read of the lyrics.
Okay. Yeah, you're coming off like you're Van Damme. You got Kenny G and your Trans Am.
You've got names like Billy Ray. Now you sing Hip Hip Hooray.
Put your Oakley's Stonewash on. Watch an MTV and you watch on.
A number one in the sides and don't touch the back. A number six on the top and don't cut it whack, Jack.
Mullet head, don't touch the back. Cut the sides, don't touch the back.
So, poetry.
Poetry.
The Beastie Boys expounded on the subject of the mullet at length in a 6-page article called Mulling Over the Mullet in issue number 2 of their magazine Grand Royale, which is also the name of their record label. And they offered a selection of alternative names for the mullet, including hockey player haircut and soccer rocker.
But it was already a hairstyle?
So, right. So The Guardian asked their readership if they knew where the term mullet comes from, which is not how newspapers work. But these are some of the answers. Quote, the hairstyle was first worn by French fashion guru Henri Mollet in the early 70s.
That sounds like mullet.
So, yes, it does sound like mullet. M-O-L-L-E-T.
It's mullet.
The Mollet.
I'm calling whack on this Beastie Boy thing.
The Mollet haircut did not see much light apart from in the French underground dance scene until it was resurrected by a popular television personality. And at that point, the word was anglicized to mullet from Mollet.
Great. So the Beastie Boys did not make it up.
No, they did not make it up, but they did popularize the use of the word mullet. They coined it in the pop culture because there was this haircut, which was short in the front, long in the back, which Henri Mollet did have. And in the 90s, we called it a bunch of different things, including, I think this is the one that everyone knew before the term mullet, which was Kentucky Waterfall.
I've never heard that. It's a cousin of the rat tail.
Yeah, it is. I had a rat tail too. It was other names for mullets: ape drape, beaver paddle.
Beaver paddle?
Beaver paddle, yeah. Bi-level, Camaro cut, business in the front, party in the back, a Canadian passport.
Only to be worn with the Canadian tuxedo?
I guess so. Coupe Longueville, El Camino.
Wait, how can it be the El Camino and the Camaro?
I believe that these are two different people saying it's also a Kentucky waterfall and a Tennessee waterfall.
Oh, yeah, like a Canadian tuxedo and what's the other name?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
Hockey hair, Kentucky waterfall, the Missouri Compromise, the cool. Mud flap, the neck warmer, the ranchero, the schlonk, which stands for short and long. The achy breaky mistakey. Soccer rocker. Squirrel pelt. The Tennessee top hat. And just, yep, nope. Now, the weirdest part about this is that everyone's collective Mandela effect is that we all heard and used the term mullet before 1994. And it seems weird that there would be personalities in pop culture known for their mullets, as mentioned in the song, like Kenny G and Jean-Claude Van Damme, before the name of the haircut itself. So, the Slate Decoder Ring podcast did a deep dive into the history of the mullet, and what they found is that the Oxford English Dictionary credited the first use of mullet in, like, print or whatever to an Australian street machine automotive magazine, which first published the description of the term mullet in 1992, which predated the Beastie Boys by 2 years. But Decoder Ring discovered that the magazine had been faked. So someone like hoaxed up the magazine and in 2018 apologized on the internet. The creator admitted faking the text and adjusting the magazine dates and showed proof of he like Pentagon papers the fucking Street Machine magazine to make it seem like they used the term mullet first.
Why?
Who can say?
Okay.
4 years later, a second mullet-themed song arrived in the form of The Vandals and their song I've Got an Ape Drape from their 1998 album Hitler Bad, Vandals Good.
Oh, now we're going to hear the ape drape too?
Oh, yeah. This is my preferred mullet song.
Okay. It's a hot take. I don't like the Beastie Boys.
I'm not a big Beastie Boys person either.
Very 1998.
Yeah. Just wait for the hook.
Even if it's really, really bad, I've got an ape drape, yes I do. They're giving up to anyone, and that means you. You can drive to Riverside and get one too, and then you'll have an ape drape like I do. Go ahead and
yeah.
Great.
All right. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Question number two. There have been a handful of women's empowerment anthems in the culture that have actually been written by men. We discussed a couple on the show, Respect and Girls Just Want to Have Fun. What other feminist, in quotes, feminist anthem was written exclusively by men? I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar. Before He Cheats. Man, I Feel Like a Woman. Or Just a Girl.
I'm just a girl in the world. That's all that you'll let me be. Is that the song
yeah.
you're talking about? That is not
yeah, that
answer.
Is the song that I'm talking about. Yeah, yeah, I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar by Helen Reddy. Before He Cheats by, oh God, what's her name?
Carrie Underwood.
Carrie Underwood. Man, I Feel Like a Woman, Shania Twain. And Just a Girl by No Doubt.
I feel like it's either Shania or Hear Me Roar. Man, I feel like a woman.
Let's go, girls. That is, I'm sorry to say, incorrect.
Is it I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar?
No, it was neither of those.
What the fuck?
So fun fact, all of these were co-written by men, which is whatever. And I'm not trying to be like edgelordy. I just came up with a few songs in my head that were I thought were like definitely written by women to throw you off. And I noticed that there's a male co-writer on every one of them, which might say more about who holds the levers of power in the music industry than anything else. But here. Before He Cheats was written by two men and zero women. The men in question are Josh Keir and Chris Tompkins.
I should have known that. Maybe. Like, Louisville Slugger, that's a little oddly specific.
Yeah, right. I think I actually threw you off by not remembering who sings Before He Cheats. Which was not a strategy. I just like could not remember Carrie Underwood's name. But this is Josh Keir singing Before He Cheats in an evening with Lyndon Wardoff Stars. I don't know what that is. It's like a fundraiser for a school in Nashville. But this is Josh singing his own song.
All right, I'm going to play the other song I know. I say that, but I forgot the words last time. So maybe I don't actually know this one all as well as I think I do.
It is a good song. Okay, so this too is going to be a whole episode.
This song?
Yeah, this song was going to be a whole episode. The inspiration was an article from crack.com called Seven Songs That Become Twisted When You Know Who Wrote Them, which is written by Mark Oliver. And you'll see why I just decided not to make it a whole episode. So this is from the Cracked article. Josh Keir and Chris Tompkins have written for artists like Tim McGraw, Jimmy Buffett, and Boyzone. The song before he cheats, that Bill Burr called an anthem for psychotic C-words was not written by an angry woman plotting her revenge on a guy who drives a pickup truck. It was written by two guys who probably drive pickup trucks. It wasn't even intended for Carrie Underwood. The boys wrote it because they wanted to do an edgy song where a girl, quote, gets pissed. It's not a women's anthem, and it's not based on anything resembling real events. It's just two guys' erroneous impression of how women think.
Later, I also don't think this is a women's anthem, which I think also threw me off on the question. Like, this
That's
is
why
just
I
like
said
an
feminist anthem in quotes.
Anti-cheating song.
Yeah, I think that some people take it as like a women's empowerment song, but
only men cheat.
Josh Keir and Chris Tompkins have written for artists like Keir and Tompkins don't exactly respect women in the song either. Keir has called her, quote, what kind of a psychopath, which is okay because they didn't intend the tune to be serious. They were going for something humorous and lighthearted, like a present day Did I Shave My Legs for This, which is a song by Deanna Carter that I have never heard before.
Me either.
I don't know what that song is. But Carrie Underwood played it completely straight, and thus was born an anthem for vengeance-minded women everywhere. Now, I'm not one to be smirchcracked.com. This is me. I'm not one to be smirchcracked.com. I actually love it, and I think at one time they did really great opinion content. And they were the first periodical that I know of to take the dangers of Trump seriously while CNN was still treating him like a total joke. David Christopher Bell wrote like a really great article about like why Trump is essentially Hitler. And Keir and Tompkins tell a bit of a different story to the Tennessean. So this is from their perspective. Tompkins says, quote, it didn't start off as a song for Carrie Underwood. It basically started off as a song for Gretchen Wilson. I went to a computer and I was just typing what I wanted to be edgy lyrics. Gretchen Wilson had some success with a song called Redneck Woman. Do you know Redneck Woman?
We can take
a listen to it. Can't drink sweet champagne.
This is like the anti-feminist feminism. Some people look
down on me. She's got posters on her wall of Skinnerd Kid. Product of my raising, I say hell yeah, and yeehaw, yeah. So it was written for Gretchen Wilson, and she had some success with the song Redneck Woman, and everyone wanted to get on the next Gretchen record, and so Tompkins typed up part of the verse of Before He Cheats, that quote, I thought I had something cool, and from that point I called Josh Keir. Fast forward, Josh Keir says, well, obviously the Gretchen thing had passed, as in her career, I think. We were told the first time that Carrie heard this song, it was during the American Idol tour, and it was in the back of the plane as they were getting ready to fly from one location of that tour to the next. Someone on the label had come up and played her the demo, and she listened to it once and said, I'm cutting that song. There was no discussion of putting it on hold or just letting us know that she would sit with it. It was one listen and knowing that she would record it. So Cracked conveniently leaves out the part that was always written for a woman and about and like from a woman's perspective.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to like dispute their assessment of its feminist bona fides. And I also like, this might be some revisionist history from the songwriters to make themselves look a little bit. I don't actually know, which is why it's not a whole episode, because like that's where the kind of the trail goes cold. And of course, we can't leave this section without seeing our friend Jax, who has done Before He Cheats, but from a the man's perspective.
So guess what? My sister came to town so she can meet my new girlfriend and we're gonna surprise her. I've been acting all suspicious, sneaking off to the airport like a dirty little liar. I have so much planned. The three of us can go to that karaoke bar. Thank God I just bought this souped-up car so we could drive around like one big happy family. Oh, I'm just so excited for my sister to meet Carrie.
Ready to go?
Oh, she's gonna love
you.
So
is she saying that it was the sister?
Yeah, yeah. She's saying that like the dude's sister was visiting and the girl is crazy for being jealous or whatever.
Great.
Great. Okay. Question number three. This is a midway question, so we're doing it in a different style. This is the style of a show called QI. Stands for Quite Interesting. It is a British quiz show, and they ask you questions that you think you know the answer to, but are a little trickier than you might imagine. And if you get the answer wrong, you hear this sound. So it's like an alarm.
Very unbearable. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
I feel like you don't have any confidence in me.
Well, so these questions are designed for you to get wrong.
Okay.
Like
great.
That's how QI
Thank
works.
Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Which famous rapper coined the saying, "So if you're having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I've got 99 problems and a bitch ain't one."
You're saying it's not who I think it is.
Who do you think it is?
Jay-Z.
So, in 1993, Ice-T releases a song called 99 Problems on his Home Invasion record. Let's take a listen to it.
Yeah, last year a lot of motherfuckers asked me why I didn't do no old sex nasty shit. But this year I went down to Miami and got my nigga from Two Live, Brother Marquise in the house. Yeah, I'm the motherfucking nigga. Yeah, we gonna answer the question about girl problems. All these niggas is having girl problems, Mark. Huh, tell him, man, tell him. Let me tell you what time it is. I got a hoe from the east, got a hoe from the west. Gotta hold it like a jacket off and rub it in a chest. I got a hoe from the north, a hoe from the south. I hold it like to suck it long and hold it in her mouth. I got a bitch with hair, a bitch with none, a bitch with a knife, a bitch with a gun, a bitch with an ass big as a TV set. And there's a bitch over there, hey, the one I'm gonna get, but yo, but maybe not. She might not like me though. No sweat to a vet, I slam my sister though. Word, I send the whole damn herd. I fuck them all and leave them on the curb. I got a bitch with a mink who rocks a fat gold link, who like to fuck me with their ass up on the kitchen sink. Got a bitch with tits, a bitch with ass, a bitch with none, but hey, I give her a pass. And I love them all, I love them crazily, and they love me back, that's why they stay with me. So if you're having girl problems, I'll prepare for your son. Got 99 problems and a bitch ain't one. Hit it.
Shocking.
Shocking. So we can do a little lyrical read if you'd like. It's not great, and I think I might make you read it all.
Oh, the bitch with the hair and a bitch with none. I heard it.
Yeah, all of it.
I got a hoe from the east. I got a hoe from the west. I got a hoe that likes to jack it off and rub it in her chest. I got a hoe from the north and a hoe from the south. A hoe that likes to suck it long and hold it in her mouth. I got a bitch with hair, a bitch with none, a bitch with a knife, and a bitch with a gun. A bitch with an ass big as a TV set. And there's a bitch over there, hey, the one I'm gonna get. But yo, maybe not. She might not like me, though. No sweat to a vet. I'll slam her sister, though.
Consent.
Word. Ice in the whole damn herd. I fuck them all and leave them on the curb. Rude.
Rude.
I got a bitch with a mink who rocks a fat gold link, who likes to fuck me with her ass up on the kitchen sink. Got a bitch with tits, a bitch with ass, a bitch with none, but hey, I'd give her a pass.
Body positivity.
And I love them all. I love them crazily, and they love me back. That's why they stay with me. So if you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, and a bitch ain't one. Hit it.
So this is very clearly not the same song, but has the same hook, right? Like, having girl problems after bad reason. And then in 2001, another rapper, Trick Daddy, did another song called 99 Problems with the same hook.
I got a bitch with pearls, a bitch of teeth with gold. A bitch on the shelf and a bitch that sold. I got
the
a bitch
same
that
song,
I know when a bitch
the bitches have different things.
Bitch I can't stand and the bitch is still loving them. I got a bitch I beep, a bitch I call, a bitch in thongs and one in regular draws. I got a bitch that's a rider and we fuck in the car. Two bitches that down with menage a trois. I got a bitch in a Corolla, a bitch in a vet. A bitch who ain't lost her virginity yet. I got a bitch that's a thug and she carry a gat. A bitch that look like Kim and one that look like the brat. I got a bitch that's a freak and she fiendin' for dick. I got a bitch from Peru and she knows speaking English. I got so many bitches that get done. I got 99 problems and the bitch ain't one. I got a broke bitch. Stay broke.
Okay, so you're gonna spit one more verse for us here, Lindsay. Here's the Trick Daddy 99 problems.
I got a bitch with pearls, a bitch with teeth. Wait, I got a bitch with pearls, a bitch teeth with golds, a bitch on the shelf and a bitch that's sold. I got a bitch down low and a bitch I'm doing publicly, a bitch I can't stand and the bitch is still loving me. I got a bitch I beep, a bitch I call, a bitch in the thongs.
I got a bitch I beep. I got a bitch I beep, a bitch I call, a bitch in thongs, and one in regular draws.
I got a bitch that's about, and we fuck in the car. Two bitches that's down with a ménage à trois.
That is spelled phonetically, like, and yeah, I don't know. Ménage à trois.
I got a bitch in a Corolla, a bitch in a Bentley, a bitch who ain't lose her virginity yet. Ew, like, leave these people alone. A bitch who ain't lose her virginity yet. I got a bitch that's a thug and she carry a gat. A bitch that look like Kim and one that looked like da brat. Who's Kim?
Lil' Kim.
Oh, it's like Kardashian? I got a bitch that's a freak and she's fiendin' for dick. I got a bitch from Peru.
For dick.
And she no speak English. Oh, woof. I got so many bitches, they get done. I got 99 problems and a bitch ain't one.
So as you accurately assessed, this is basically the same song. So this is from Vulture. The Trick Daddy release, also called 99 Problems, would qualify as just a remake of the Ice-T song. Much like Ice delivering his laundry list in the original, Trick's version off of the 2001 album Thugs Are Us finds him raunchily boasting about all the ladies he has gotten with. He raps, I get so many bitches, they get done, I got 99 problems and a bitch ain't one. Okay, so then in November of 2003, Jay-Z's chart topper was conceived.
If you having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. I got the rat patrol on the cat patrol. Foes that want to make sure my cask is closed. Rap critics say he's money cash holes. I'm from the hood, stupid. What type of facts are those? If you grew up with holes in your zap of toes, you celebrate the minute you was having dope. I'm like, fuck critics, you can kiss my whole asshole. If you don't like my lyrics, you can press fast forward. Got beef with radio if I don't play they show. They don't play my hits. I don't give a shit. So
producer Rick Rubin said in New York Magazine that in November of 2003, he got the idea of recontextualizing the song from Chris Rock. So Chris Rock gave him the idea to do it. And so this is Rick Rubin's quote. The Ice-T song is about him talking about all of his girls and what a great pimp he is, and our idea was to use that same hook concept, and instead of it being a bragging song, it's more about the problems. Like, this is about all of this is about the other side of that story, and thus was born one of Jay-Z's most famous tracks. So we can read all the lyrics to the song.
If you're having girl problems, I feel bad for you, son. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one.
Hit me.
I got the rap patrol on the gat patrol. Foes that want to make sure my casket's closed. rap critics that say he's money cash hoes. I'm from the hood, stupid. What type of facts are those?
If you grew up with holes in your zapatos, you'd celebrate the minute you was having dough. I'm like, fuck critics, you can kiss my whole ass. And if you don't like my lyrics, you can press fast forward.
Got beef with radio. If I don't play, they show. They don't play my hits. Well, I don't give a shit. So rap mags try and use my black ass so advertisers can give them more cash for ads, fuckers. I don't know what you take me as or understand the intelligence that Jay-Z has. I'm from rags to riches.
N-word.
I ain't dumb. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one. Hit me.
In the year's 94, and my trunk is raw. In my rear view mirror is the motherfucking law. I got two choices, y'all. Pull over the car or bounce on the devil, put the pedal to the floor.
Now, I ain't trying to see no highway chase with Jake. Plus, I got a few dollars. I can fight the case. So I pull over to the side of the road. I heard, son, do you know I am stopping you for? Because I'm young and I'm black and my hat's real low. Do I look like a mind reader, sir? I don't know. Am I under arrest or should I guess some more? Well, you was doing 55 in a 54. Uh-huh.
License and registration, step out of the car. Are you carrying a weapon on you? I know a lot of you are. I ain't stepping out of shit. All my papers legit. Well, would you mind if I look around the car a little bit? Well, my glove compartment's locked, so's the trunk in the back, and I know my rights. You're going to need a warrant for that. Aren't you sharp as a tack? You some type of lawyer or something? Somebody important or something?
Well, I ain't past the bar, but I know a little bit, enough that you won't illegally search my shit. Well, we'll see how smart you are when the canine come. I got 99 problems, but a bitch ain't one.
So this verse is based on an actual experience of Jay-Z's in the 1990s in New Jersey. And he wrote that in 1994, he was pulled over by police while carrying cocaine in a secret compartment in his sunroof. And he refused to let the police search the car, and the police called for drug sniffing dogs.
Okay.
I also like that he never mentioned in the song that he kept the cocaine in the sunroof, because they can use that in legal proceedings. Nice. And they have before. They've put people away.
He said he's not dumb. He told you.
Yeah, he's not dumb. All right, let's do the last verse.
Now, once upon a time, not too long ago, a N-word like myself had too strong arm a hoe. This is not a hoe in the sense of having a pussy, but a pussy having no goddamn sense try and push me. I tried to ignore him, talk to the Lord, pray for him, because some fools just love to perform. You know the type, loud as a motorbike, but wouldn't bust a grape in a fruit fight. The only thing that's going to happen is I'm going to get to clapping, and he and his boys going to be yapping to the captain. And there I go, trapped in the Kit Kat again, back through the system with the riffraff again, friends on the floor scratching again, paparazzis with my camera snapping them. DA tried to give a N-word shaft again, half a mil for a bail because I'm African, all because this fool was harassing them, trying to play the boy like he's saccharin. But ain't nothing sweet about how I hold my gun. I got 99 problems. Being a bitch ain't one.
Ooh, twist. You crazy for this one, Rick. It's your boy. So the Black Album single was released on April 27th, 2004. So it's almost the 20-year anniversary of the song. It reached number 30 on the Billboard charts. And the climax of the music video sees Jay-Z riddled with bullets, courted controversy, and required an extensive disclaimer from MTV's John Norris before it could air on MTV. But this is not the only song from 2004 that uses the hook, I got 99 problems and a bitch ain't one.
Oh, God.
Because Lil Wayne dropped his mixtape, The Prefix, in which he freestyles to a track called In My Life, I got 99 problems and a bitch ain't one. I got 99 partners and a snitch ain't one. I got 99 bitches and I don't love one. My 1999 bitches, I been done. So the problem is with all of this that Jay-Z didn't really acknowledge the original song, and this caused a beef between him and Ice-T. So in 2014, in radio.com interview, Ice-T said that he was frustrated with Jay's decision not to show him any love after using the hook for the 2003 version of 99 Problems. This is Ice-T's quote. Why has Jay-Z never said this is an Ice-T song? Show me some love. That's just another way of handling the situation. I handle the situation differently. If I use your music, I want to let people know.
Yeah.
And Ice-T stated that, I agree. I totally agree. Ice-T stated that his comments came across Jay-Z's desk, and at some award show, the Grammys, Jay-Z asked Ice if there was an issue. And so Ice says, quote, but I said, yo, well, you know, when you did 99 Problems, at the end of the record, you could have said Ice or given me a little dap or something, but I'm not mad at it. What had happened was people wanted to know the story. I'm at the Grammys and Jay-Z comes to me and he says, Ice, you know I love you, right? And Ice said, Ice says, yeah. And Jay-Z says, well, you know, it's on the internet that you're mad. And Ice says, I'm not mad. They're just bringing up all kinds of interviews about it. And they asked me the story. So I told them the true story. And Jay-Z goes, yeah, man, but it's no hard feelings. And he starts talking about how me and him, because I met Jay-Z back in the day. Big Daddy Kane brought Jay-Z to my house back in the day when he was just starting out, and I used to take Jay-Z around and roll my car, him and Dame Dash, so we're friends. That's the quote. He's just like basically stream of consciousness talking about how he and Jay-Z are cool. And then in November of 2004, Jay-Z and Linkin Park mashed up their various hits on a record called Collision Course, 99 Problems combined with the songs Points of Authority and One Step Closer. And then, incredibly, in 2009, 99 Problems entered the political lexicon because Jay-Z performed at the Obama staff inauguration ball, gleefully rapping, I got 99 problems, but Bush ain't one, for some very enthusiastic interns. Why, yes, there is a video. That's a lot of interns. Yeah, I don't know, man. Okay. Number four. Which 1990s rap rock icon was inspired by the movie La La Land to host a weekly jazz night at a magic-themed bar in Los Angeles until COVID shut it down? A. Fred Durst. B. Kid Rock. C. Jonathan Davis of Korn. Or D. Mark McGrath.
I have a really hard time thinking of any of these people being inspired by La La Land. So I just need to say my names, who's available. It's Sugar Ray.
The guy from Sugar Ray.
Fred Durst.
Of Limp Bizkit.
Kid Rock. Or
Jonathan Davis from Korn.
I'm going to go with Kid Rock.
Every Thursday night at the Black Rabbit Rose in Hollywood, California, Fred Durst MCs a jazz night featuring young local talent. The reservation-only event goes by Fred's with a Z. And if LA Weekly, this is from LAist, and if LA Weekly is right, the music is actually pretty great.
Wow, okay.
Fred Durst. So this is from LAist. Fred explains how jazz has always been a passion of his outside of his Limp Bizkit career, and he hoped to start something both sexy and cool. And he felt the mainstream acceptance of La La Land was the perfect motivating tool for getting the Jazz Night off the ground. He's quick to recognize how the event is off-brand for him, mentioning the fear of hearing, oh, Fred Durst is doing a Jazz Night? What's the lounge? What's this, the lounge version of Nookie? The stereotype hasn't prevented him from following his passion, though, because he's reached a new level of serenity in his own life. He's learned to embrace the now instead of worrying too much about tomorrow and dwelling on yesterday. And that means embracing the opportunity to book jazz bands and feature new talent that he gets excited about. This is all from the LA.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. New talent like Lady Gaga.
What? I'm sad this got shut down by COVID.
So it didn't entirely get shut down by COVID. As recently as 2021, they seem to do another event. So I think that it happens just a little bit more rarely. And according to the AV Club, as for the magic, Durst says he's not a fanatic, but he does think that magic tricks are very cool. Not a fanatic is an interesting thing to say, because also around this time, not to rest on his laurels as the host of a jazz night, Durst also directed a movie called The Fanatic. The Fanatic is a thriller starring John Travolta, where a rabid fan stalks his favorite action hero and destroys the star's life. And you'll never guess which role Travolta plays.
How old is this movie?
It came out in 2021. Oh, I'm sorry, it came out in 2019. Here's the trailer. You are a fan. Without you,
it's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Dunbar. Is Hunter Dunbar here tonight?
Enough.
I need to get an autograph. Don't let him do this to me.
He does have a mullet.
Is it difficult to find famous people's houses?
There's a theme.
You have to be careful. I don't want you to be accused of stalking.
Hey, you can't just come to my private residence looking for me. Listen, pal, I don't know how you found me, but I don't ever want to see you in this neighborhood again.
I think that's Devin Sawa.
I mean, it kind of is Devin Sawa.
It is Devin Sawa, yeah.
Oh my god.
Help! I just wanted an autograph!
I'm super watching
her. Wait! Wait! Wait!
How do you mind?
John Travolta. The finale. Yeah, it's like Misery. Directed by Fred Durst.
Who let Fred Durst direct?
That's a great question. So he did direct a movie that did okay called The Education of Charlie Banks, which did kind of okay and has a young Jesse Eisenberg in it.
I don't think I saw it.
The Fanatic earned $3,153 at the box office.
$3,000?
$3,153, yes.
Oh my god, that is sad. What was the budget? What did they pay Travolta?
More than that. More than that. Okay, question number five. Okay. Which 90s Britpop song was written as a parody of a Seattle grunge song, which itself was a parody of other Seattle grunge songs? So you've got four options.
Okay.
Radiohead's Creep. Oasis, Roll With It. Pulp's Common People. Or Blur, Song 2.
I don't think it's Creep, because I've listened a little bit about how Creep got made.
Sure.
Maybe I just didn't hear the right part, but...
Maybe. I'm not giving anything away.
I'm going to go with song 2 for $500, Bob.
That is correct. I don't know why you got one right.
I don't know why you got one right when you had to watch the video.
No, I don't know why you went, you answered, and then you wagered after you answered.
Isn't that how they play Jeopardy?
No. They pick the category, and then they wager.
Number 2 is the category.
Is the category, and also the answer. Okay, let's take a quick listen to Song 2 by Blur. While the rumor is that Creep was written as a parody of other Britpop songs, Blur's Song 2, parentheses, Woohoo, was written as a send-up, an homage of the Seattle sound, specifically, or should I say most notably, the song Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Oh, we did that on the show.
We did do that on the show. The drum beat, the riff, the dynamics in that the riff is just the same but louder in certain parts, and the complete nonsense lyrics were supposed to be calling back to the massive Nirvana hit from 6 years previous. And if you recall, in our Smells Like Teen Spirit episode, which is your episode, the Nirvana song also started out as a bit of a send-up. Kathleen Hanna of Bikini Kill wrote Kurt Smells Like Teen Spirit, which was the name of a deodorant at the time, on Kurt's wall because Cobain was dating Bikini Kill's drummer, Toby Vail, who wore Teen Spirit as a deodorant. So Kurt literally smelled like Toby, which is what Kathleen Hanna was saying, but he didn't know that.
And he
thought it was cool, and he wrote the song as kind of a pushback of this, like, voice of a generation thing that people had started saying about him. And he wanted to see how much nonsense he could sing, and his fans would still dance to it.
There you go. That worked out.
There's some disagreement on how mean-spirited the Blur version is supposed to be. Damon Albarn of Blur is historically kind of a dick. But Blur superfans insist that Blur had grown tired of their own sound and were, quote, smoking a lot of weed and listening to Pavement.
Okay.
The numerology of the song worked out in its favor. It is the second song on Blur's album, and it is 2 minutes and 2 seconds long, and there are 2 verses and 2 choruses. And it also coincidentally peaked at number 2 on the UK charts.
Would you look at that?
Yeah. And Damon Albarn's contempt for Britpop would go on to inspire him to form Gorillaz just 3 or 4 years later and put his original sound to bed, because Gorillaz is this kind of like jazzy electro hip hop sort of thing.
Yeah.
And of course, Weird Al beat Blur to the punch by 5 years when he released a song called Smells Like Nirvana in 1992. When Al called Kurt Cobain up to ask him for permission to parody the song, as is Al's custom, Kurt reportedly asked if the song would be about food, which was Al's custom at the time. And Al told him that it would be about how no one can understand what the fuck he's saying on the song, and Kurt laughed and agreed. So there are not one, but 3 songs about how Kurt Cobain just sings gibberish, one of them written by Kurt himself.
Perfection.
So this song came out only 1 year after Smells Like Teen Spirit, and pretty accurately parodies the video.
Now.
Yeah. Oh, totally. But it's funny because this is like a parody of a parody, and you can really tell because he doesn't have to do much to like make fun of the thing that is making fun of itself. Like, oh, the cheerleaders have armpit hair in this one. Okay.
Yeah, but otherwise, this was just the video.
Yeah, literally the exact same thing.
Now I'm mumbling and I'm screaming.
Also, respect to Al for playing his guitar left-handed in this video, just like Kurt.
He's a stickler for the truth, okay. The details.
Last question. So this question is in the form of a show called Actually. So this is a show on Dropout. This is a show on Dropout TV. So this question will come in the form of a statement, and the statement has one incorrect part of it. And it is your job to start your response with actually, and correct me. Correct the incorrect part of the statement. So this is our actually. This is our homage to actually. I would love to have some of the producers of actually on this show because they're great. Okay. Final question. Rock and roll has had a long history of releasing live performances as radio cuts. Some of these live releases, Cheap Trick's I Want You to Want Me, live at Budokan, Elton John's Benny and the Jets, live at Dodger Stadium, and Talking Heads' Once in a Lifetime from Stop Making Sense, do even better on the charts than their studio versions.
Actually, can you say that one more time?
Yes. Rock and roll has had a long history of releasing live performances as radio cuts. Some of these live releases, Cheap Trick's I Want You to Want Me, live at Budokan, Elton John's Benny and the Jets live from Dodger Stadium, and Talking Heads' Once in a Lifetime from Stop Making Sense do even better on the charts than the original studio versions.
Actually, Stop Making Sense is a documentary. And
did I ever say that it wasn't?
Not a stadium like the other ones.
Sure, so that isn't necessarily false. Just like one of these things is not like the other.
Actually, Elton John didn't play Dodger Stadium until much later in his career.
You're getting pretty warm. Do you want to take another crack at it? I'm inclined to give it to you just because of that. But you want to take another crack at it? There is a more correct answer.
Actually, it was not Dodger Stadium at the time because the Dodgers were from Brooklyn.
No, we're further worse. Not only is Benny and the Jets not live from Dodger Stadium, it's not a live recording.
Hey, Pete. So, okay, well, I knew that the real Benny and the Jets wasn't live, but I thought maybe there was a live one going around.
Wait. Hey, Pete.
Taking us the weather, Bob.
So incredibly wrong.
Stick around.
Yes, so there is no live version of Benny and the Jets that was a radio hit. The version that we all know with the crowd noise is a fake crowd. Well, it's a real crowd, but not.
I think I got it
performance.
Right.
Yeah, I'm inclined to give it to you. Like I said, it's not from Dodger Stadium. All right, so let's take a listen to Benny and the Jets. This is the official version.
And the Dodgers are from Brooklyn.
The Dodgers are from Brooklyn, but they were in LA at the time.
At the time that Benny and the Jets came out?
Yes.
Were they?
The Dodgers moved to Los Angeles in 1958.
Tell that to Jackie Robinson.
I will. What? The fuck does that mean? So you can hear some crowd cheering. And then you hear him play the piano a little. And then the song starts. So, despite sounding as though it's recorded live, the song was actually recorded in a studio with live sound effects added later. This is producer Peter Dudgeon. I'm sorry, producer Gus Dudgeon. I heard Pete and I thought Peter. Hey, Pete.
You heard to Pete then.
No, I didn't. It's still kid. So, this is producer Gus Dudgeon. Quote, for some weird reason, Elton happened to have hit the opening piano chord of the song exactly one bar before the song actually started. So I was doing the mix, and the chord kept coming on when you normally wouldn't expect it to hear, and I turned to the engineer, David Henschel, and said, "What does that remind you of?" "It's just the sort of thing that people do on stage before they start a song, just to kind of get everyone going, okay, here we go, ready." And for that reason, the chord being there made me think, maybe we should fake live this. So Dudgeon mixed in sounds from a 1972 performance of Elton John in Royal Festival Hall and a 1970 Jimi Hendrix concert at the Isle of Wight. He also included a series of whistles from a live concert in Vancouver and added various hand claps and shouts.
I never thought this was live. Is there a live radio cut, though?
Nope, this
not,
is it.
Not in existence.
But people do think it's live because it comes and goes. It, like, comes throughout the rest of the song. After recording the song in the studio, Elton and the band worried that it was too plain and unoriginal. And in the documentary on the making of Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, Elton John recalled, quote, "I fought tooth and nail against Benny coming out as a single. And according to guitarist Davey Johnstone, Benny and the Jets was one of the oddest songs we ever recorded. We just sat back and said, this is really odd. And while mixing the album, Gus Dudgeon came up with the idea of creating a live from a Playhouse Theater sound for the track. And that includes adding this, like, slapback reverb on the vocal and the piano.
Great.
So, like, you can hear a little bit of echo that isn't real. I mean, it's real. They, like, mic'd it like that, but it's not from a live performance.
I like to know that they got the whistles from Vancouver.
Me too. Back to the Beastie Boys, they released a cover of Benny and the Jets in 1999 with vocalist Biz Markie. And that's what we're going out on today. Congratulations, Lindsay. These were difficult questions. You got two out of six.
Whoa.
Almost 50%.
Not even.
Not even. But the Jay-Z question was meant to trip you up.
Also, that wasn't my answer, but I wasn't going to be a stickler about it. I was like, oh, so it's not who I think it is. And you're like, well, who do you think it is? And I was like, well, Jay-Z. And then you were like, eh. So the truth was, I was not going to guess Ice-T.
Didn't even mention. No.
That was a flag on the play.
Flag on the play. All right.
Find us on the internet at Lyrics for Lunch, on Instagram and Twitter. Except I never tweet.
No.
For longer and
weirder neither
stuff,
should you.
Send us a weird little message at lyricsforlunch@gmail.com.
And tell your friends about us. Tell your enemies about us. Tell the Beastie Boys about us. And tell anyone you can, any way you can.
If you want to support the show, go to lyricsforlunch.com and click support the show. We put a lot of time and effort into making these episodes for you, and we want to keep doing it.
And you're ungrateful little bastards. And tune in next week when we're back to our normal format, right? And Lindsay's going to take me on a story through music history.
An incredible journey of magic. Goodbye.